One is an adaptation of the cheesy video game series starring the guy that played the cowboy character in Justified. The other is a film adaptation of the cheesy video game series played by the guy who played the cowboy character in Asteroid City. Hitman. They remade it. And welcome back to another episode of They Remade It. I'm your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
And it is nice and hunky-dory to be back in the recording booth here. If I sound slightly more drained than normal, it is because I have recently changed my normal day job. I've gotten a new position because, believe it or not, I don't make money off of this show. Which is, you know, fine. It's, you know, in case that was ever of question. But now I went from working from home full-time remotely to back to the office, so my body is getting used to all of that. So if I sound slightly more tired than usual, that's why. I'm just not used to it.
Yep, back into the office workforce like the rest of us schlubs.
Hey, I mean, trust me, if I had the option, I would have kept doing it, but just as it was the better move to make.
It certainly sounded I
needed the money. So this place plays notably more. This place pays notably more. So it's nice.
And we rejoice. It means,
you know, yay. Now it means having to drive out and about now, and the drivers in my city are scary. And coming home today, the air was for some reason filled with smoke. So that was a little weird. I don't know what was going on with that. I'm sure there was some totally fine fire somewhere in town, but you know, I got home and was like, oh, the air smells funny. I'm going inside.
Someone else's problem.
It's like, mainly, it was very much that moment I was driving home of, you know, I know it's a very, like, remote possibility, but I really hope this isn't a fire coming from, like, my house. Like, just driving along, like, dum-de-dum, I really hope it's okay. And then I turn the corner, I'm like, oh, thank God.
I worry about that far too often.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty valid fear, honestly, all things considered.
Right.
All my stuff's here.
No, your stuff.
Like my dog.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I kid, of course.
My dog is not stuff. She's far more than that.
What a dark turn.
It was just. Yeah, seriously. Well, it's also where all my movies and things are. Which, speaking of. Horrible segue. Unless you had. Yes. Okay, yeah. Sure. So I was gonna let you go. Sorry.
Well, speaking of horrible stuff, I watched a number of things. But I'll just, like I've sort of been doing with the show, unless I have nothing else to talk about, I'll just go through the newer things I've been watching. I caught The Zone of Interest in theaters. That was sort of the last piece of the Best Picture nominee puzzle that I was missing, and there was nowhere else to view it until there were some special in theater events near me. So I went and I caught it. It's very interesting. I quite enjoyed it. Basically, for those unfamiliar, it's a Nazi commandant and his family and sort of the day-to-day of their lives as they live on the other side of a wall dividing them from Auschwitz, basically. Hmm. And it's interesting.
Of course.
It's interesting because of how mundane it is, and it's like the day-to-day lives of this family. You really get to know the ins and outs, and you know what, how they think of things, and you know what their alignments are to one another and everything. And in saying that, it almost sounds like it's trying to paint them in a positive light, but it's obviously not. It's kind of, I think it's more horrifying than a lot of the cartoonishly evil Nazi supervillains that we get in movies all the time, because this is just like, oh, it's the family man, and you know, he loves his daughter and he has a dog, and then he'll just sit down in a meeting and be joking around with a couple of guys while they're talking about building new gas chambers and like the logistics of it. And frankly, it's a lot more chilling just because of how ho-hum it all is, you know. So I quite liked it.
Well, that's terrifying and interesting.
Yes. Who knows how it will perform at Hollywood's biggest night?
Yeah, well, as if we really have too much vested interest in it these days.
Yeah. Outside of that, a couple of other things not related to the Oscars, just movies that have come out this year. I saw the, I don't think I talked about this last time, because I think I saw it the Sunday following our last record, but I watched the new Mean Girls musical.
How'd that go?
It was interesting.
I'm told really, mixed things.
I didn't really care for a lot of the songs, but the people that are singing them are quite good, so that's a bit of a mixed bag, because it's like, oh, this song sucks and is stupid, but damn if their voices aren't something spectacular. But really, my main takeaway, because I'm sure you are to some degree as well, or maybe not, but I'm fairly well familiar with the Mean Girls of the late 90s.
Yeah.
And watching this updated version with all of the Twitters and hashtags and like just everything, I thought I was turning to dust in the theater. It's like, should I be here? It was a very weird feeling of like something that I haven't gotten from anything. I even watch like modern kids movies in the theater sometimes just because I'm such an animation hound and I don't feel that. But watching this movie, I was like, I don't know if I should be here. This doesn't feel like it's for me.
Yeah, no. And like even the original didn't really have that feeling. It was whole point was kind of being, you know, talking about the fact of these girls' lives and, you know, a lot of very veiled feminist theory talking about like how these girls have to survive like this, basically. And I saw a lot of criticisms of the new one. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if I will. I saw a lot of criticisms that a lot of that was kind of sanded over for a lot more of like the girl boss sort of aesthetic thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, subsequent Twitterization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I especially get that from the two friend characters that, you know, aren't in the Plastics group. And it's weird because they kind of act like, I don't know, the muses a bit, because the whole musical also has a framing device of that they're telling the story on, like, TikTok or something. So occasionally they'll just talk to the camera about, like, what's happening and what's going on. So, yeah. Not for me. It's not for me.
I don't care for the TikTok.
Well, moving off of Mean Girls and TikTok, I will tell you a movie that is worse than Mean Girls that I saw.
Oh, cool.
And that is Argylle. I watched Argylle in...
Yeah. Ladies, wasn't that gentlemen. Wasn't that a Guy Ritchie one, or
no,
it was a different guy?
This was Matthew Vaughn. And ladies and gentlemen,
yes,
I implore you, or I question, why is Matthew Vaughn not in movie jail yet? He is a bad director. He does the same thing every single time, trying to copy his success with Kingsman, and literally every single time since then, it fails.
The thing is, I actually kind of liked The King's Man, the prequel to the Kingsman series, because I thought it was like, okay, cool, everything a spy flick with World War One aesthetic. Like, that's fun. I saw it got a lot of shit for it. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but I just thought it was a fun time. But god damn, does all his other stuff feel that way?
Yeah.
Even the first Kingsman, I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of, the more and more I think back on it.
I liked it all right. Just, I'm sure if I went back and watched it, I wouldn't care for it as much, but I was unfamiliar with his shtick, so it suited me well enough. But I am fully tired of what he does.
Oh, yeah, and he also did the Johnny English Reborn movie. Okay, no, fuck this guy.
Yeah, speaking of, wow, that's not great. So yeah, fuck Argylle, bad movie. So far, worst thing I've seen this year, but it's only near the end of February, so we'll see.
Well, this tends to be a dump month, so.
That's true. That's true. It was just, I was wondering if I would see anything worse than Night Swim, and I did. Let's see. Oh, and the last thing that I was going to bring up is I ended up seeing Lisa Frankenstein. As well.
For everyone.
Which was fun enough. I had a good time watching it. I think there are some problems with the writing, but the overall aesthetic and theming that they're going for is a lot of fun. And I also need to admit my biases here, because even though the obvious motif and theming is based around Frankenstein, I really got a strong Little Shop of Horrors vibe from this, which is obviously a musical that I adore. Go back and listen to that episode of the podcast to hear more about that. So,
which I instantly feels like,
picked up on that.
Which even kind of feels like even the original Little Shop of Horrors has some elements of the original Frankenstein in it.
To a degree.
Just like the...
Just more of actually doing the monster's bidding.
Yeah, right.
But yeah.
I forgot how dark the original Little Shop turned out.
Oh, the Roger
ends with everyone. Yeah, like where like everyone's faces are like in its like flowers and everything. I was like, whoa.
You know, it's funny because I talked about this movie in our Little Mermaid episode, but I watched the Howard Ashman movie on Disney Plus, just called Howard. Folks, let's stop naming movies that way, please.
Yeah, no, I don't. It's so like fucking come on.
But if I'm not mistaken, Alan Menken, because he's one of the talking heads in the documentary, obviously, he was talking about the Little Shop Broadway musical that they put together that got them hired for Little Mermaid, basically. And I think they were going to have it on stage that during the final Don't Eat the Plants number, that all the folks that had been eaten, like Mushnick and Audrey, their heads would be the buds on Audrey too, and they would be sort of singing the chorus, but I don't think they were able to pull it off, or there were technical problems with it or something. So that almost happened. Ooh.
That's wild. I mean, that would have been metal as hell if they managed it.
I agree. But yeah, that's Lisa Frankenstein, apparently. So that's,
sorry.
No, that's fine. But it's all I have. So what about you?
Yes, we have continued to go down our list a little bit. Yay. Hannah and I, that being me. I can't remember if I mentioned before that we've started watching the Lord of the Rings movies together. I think I did.
Briefly?
Yeah, because we had at least watched The Fellowship last time, and that was, you know, good. It's The Fellowship. This time around, we have watched the second one, Two Towers, which is kind of a childhood favorite of mine, just because my brother and I think we watched the ending battle at Helm's Deep probably a full 24 times at one point or another, because we just love it so much. So I actually had kind of forgotten about a lot of the rest of the movie, and oh my god, this movie subtitle should have just been called Meanwhile, because it's just the entire movie, it's cutting between all the different perspectives, that being Sam and Frodo, meeting Gollum and them kind of going off and doing their thing, then Merry and Pippin getting brought into, you know, the Arbor Wars with the Ents, and then the remainder of the Fellowship with Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli going off and like doing their thing to help out Frodo from the sidelines. And it's just like, I do love this movie still, but damn, is it frantic. It's a very confusing movie at times. I still adore the relationship between Sam and Frodo. I think the performances that Elijah Wood and Sean Astin put on are so genuinely heartfelt that it's hard not to love it. And it's very much in that vein of, like, Hannah and I even were commenting this when we watched it, of there's like the long kind of standing joke that like Sam and Frodo were absolutely gay for each other, and to which even Sean Astin himself has kind of fed into it a little bit, where it's like, I think we saw he did a video answering questions online, and he has answered a question. It's like, how come we never see Sam and Frodo kiss on screen? To which Sean Astin replies with, well, maybe they did. They just did. Like, I was basically like, how come like Sam and Frodo never kiss? It's like, maybe they did kiss, it just wasn't on screen. You don't know.
Off screen.
Yeah, exactly. Off screen, sorry. And I find it very funny. But watching it, it's clear that it's meant to be a bond that's like beyond definition, beyond straightforward, you know, titles and labels and that sort of thing, because of what they go through together. But at the same time, to the modern eye, it's like, wow, these guys are gay for each other. it's crazy.
Did y'all notice these guys are gay for each other?
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, we all like, did.
Yeah, and that weird third with Gollum, or I guess fourth with Gollum and Smeagol. But, you know, watch that. I still loved it. Hannah's, you know, mixed on it. She's just like, yeah, it's cool. She even said, this would have been a lot more fun for me if I had seen it when I was a kid. I was like, fair.
Yeah.
That's very, very fair. After that, we watched a movie that I had almost completely forgotten about. Even after putting it on the list, but was reminded how much I friggin' love it. Spotlight, if you know that one. It won Movie of the Year from its year.
Yeah, I do. I have not seen it, but I am well familiar with it because I remember that year.
Yeah, it's the like the investigative team that kind of breaks open the like, you know, Catholic molestation like ring that had been going on in Boston at the time, and for a very long time. And it's a movie purely about, you know, in like very dry investigations and interviews and all this sorts of things, because, you know, it's a newspaper team. And it is so damn interesting. It is so compelling to watch just in every occasion. There really is no weak part about it, in my opinion. It's just, it's hard really to kind of even talk more about it because it's just a very dense film with what it talks about and everything. But God, it's so good. I forgot how much I liked it. So, you know, watch that, folks, if you want some investigative journalism. But yeah, not a whole lot to say about that one. Still love it. Hannah loved it too. And I can't remember if we watched anything else major, but one thing we did sort of watch, which was on the list but not checked off, was the movie Airplane. Obviously the famous parody film. But partway through, because I've seen it multiple times, and I at least thought that Hannah hadn't seen it yet. But we got partway through, and Hannah was recognizing the jokes, and she realized, wait a minute, have we watched this together? Or I think I told her, like, did we watch this together? And I think we both eventually realized several years ago in the earlier parts of our relationship, we did in fact watch together because I showed it to her. So we stopped about maybe 45 minutes in, maybe a little less, because we realized, yeah, we've seen this together. We can go and just check this off the list. We're good. And so we just hung out after that. We, you know, it's off the list now at least, but it was just a very funny moment of like, oh yeah, crap. Of course she had forgotten as well. So
yeah. Well, now you guys can watch Airplane 2 together.
God, I forgot that was a thing.
And also, for the obvious bump, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to our episode on Airplane.
Yeah, it was fun. And also half of it was really dry and boring, because the movie it was based on was really dry and boring.
What are you going to do? They made it better.
Yeah. But beyond that, that's pretty much everything I've watched. Beyond that, I've been just, you know, continuing to play games, you know, whenever I have the spare time. I have remembered that I have kind of the guilty pleasure of like fighter pilot games, that the one specifically here being Ace Combat 7 and Project Wingman. And God, I love those silly, stupid games. They're so absurd. they're so much fun. They're just, you're flying around in a jet that you visibly can see on it can hold at maximum maybe 4 missiles on it. And your ammo count for them is, in the case of Ace Combat, something like 70 standard missiles plus another like 50 or 40 or whatever secondary missiles. And in Project Wingman, it can be an upwards of like 250. It's like, it's so silly. And you're flying around and you're doing what you are effectively depopulating entire countries with the amount of people you're shooting down as one person. And throughout both games, they're both like, God, this guy's inhuman, the amount of things he's able to do. It's like, yeah, it's insane, isn't it? And just, you know, the fact in Project Wingman, the fact that with 250 missiles, there are some missions where you can very reasonably run out of missiles, the amount of crap you have to do. So it's just, they're such silly bullshit games, and I adore them to their core. I forgot how much I love them. Especially in the case of Ace Combat, it's got that very, you know, Japanese game then localized to America kind of vibe, where the dialogue is always just kind of like really weirdly melodramatic and everything, and just like all the titles and everything are crazy. It's just like, it's so hard to describe in its own way. But I adore it to death. I think I've played through Ace Combat 7 probably like 4 or 5 times. Not recently, in total. Yeah, I love it. It's a pretty straightforward. It's not a hard game once you get into it, but I just think it's a lot of fun. Yeah, that's kind of taking up my time. But
cool. We all have our passions.
Yeah. I can't quite call this a guilty pleasure. I love it to death, but it's so silly. It tries so hard to be like, look at all these planes that we have that are based off of, you know, real life equivalent and everything. Meanwhile, I'm like, I'm pretty sure a standard MiG fighter cannot hold several hundred bombs. Like, I'm sorry. Like, thank you for your attempt at realism. This is not how planes work.
Well, at a certain point, the game's also got to be fun, you see.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it fully just does not give a shit with that, where it goes like, here, we're going to give the like detailed designs and styles of the planes for like the plane nuts out there who are really into that stuff, and then we're also going to make a completely over the top power fantasy of a game, and we don't care that they don't mesh at all. Just go have fun. I'm like, yay,
that's a nice
make believe.
Two seemingly different ideals.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the thing that I love about I don't know whether it's just a Japanese game mentality, but it feels like every time I play a game that's got like a Japanese-based developer, they kind of take that in stride of, yeah, we realize this is ridiculous, but we're going to pick the things we like, and then we're also going to make it fun, okay? So stop complaining.
Don't you want to have fun?
It's just, then meanwhile, you have things like, you know, Polish developers where it's like, you will come in here, you will suffer, and then you will leave. Please leave a good review. I'm looking at you, Frostpunk.
Ugh.
And this war of mine, my God. Both incredibly good games. I shouldn't imply otherwise. They just make you suffer.
Oh boy. Well, speaking of things that made me suffer.
Oh yeah. I had a feeling. Oh man, I am in one way sorry I picked these movies, but on the other way, I am so happy I picked these movies. It's a hit, man. Oh my God. So, starting with a film from 2007 called Simply Hitman, it is directed by Xavier Jens, written by Skip Woods, and it's based on the video game series Hitman by IO Interactive. Its main cast is made up of Timothy Oliphant as Agent 47, Douglas Scott as Mike Whittier, Robert Knepper as Yuri Olga Kurilenko as Nika Baronia, Ulrich Thompson as Mikhail Belikov and his body double, and Tenry Ian Cusick as Udre Belikov. Inside a heavily guarded facility, a group of young boys are given tattoos of barcodes on the backs of their shaved heads and then trained in weapons, demolition, unarmed combat, stamina, and strength to become professionally trained hitmen who operate around the globe. In the present day, Interpol agent Mike Whittier arrives home and is met at gunpoint by one Agent 47. The two talk about Agent 47's life as a professional hitman, raised and trained by a clandestine group known simply as the Organization. Flashing back to 3 months prior, 47 is completing a hit on a Nigerian warlord named Bwani Ovi by force-feeding a captured soldier with plastic explosives and using him as a human bomb to kill him. In a subsequent change of plans, 47 is told by his organization handler, Diana Burnwood, that he is to kill his next target, Russian President Mikhail Belikov, publicly instead of privately. 47 completes his mission by shooting the man in the head, but before he can escape Russia, he is contacted by his superiors. He is mystified when he is told that his hit was a failure and that Belikov survived the attack on his life. The organization notifies him of a witness to the assassination and orders him to intercept and kill her. However, when 47 realizes she's never seen him before, he does not shoot her. Instead, he narrowly avoids an assassination attempt on himself by another agent and realizes that he is being set up. His employers send his location and identity to the FSB, basically the Russian secret police, which they call it the secret police in there as well, but I'm pretty sure that's just like their special forces, but whatever. They send his identity to them, but Diana secretly calls 47 and tips him off, revealing that Belikov himself was the one that ordered the hit on his own life. After escaping from his hotel, 47 intercepts Nika, Belikov's mistress and a woman who had supposedly witnessed his hit. He interrogates her and discovers that Belikov has a body double who ordered the hit on the real Belikov in order to take his place as the president of Russia. The organization, hoping to gain influence with this new government, ordered 47 to kill Nika and then set him up to be erased and thus cover their own tracks. Nika and 47, attempting to leave Russia by train, are pursued by organization agents, whom 47 subdues in hand-to-hand combat and then kills. Which they seem like to be fighting each other, and that's not really specified, but I'll talk about that later. Whittier then attempts to arrest 47 himself, only to be very easily overpowered. Nika persuades 47 to let Whittier go free, and Whittier is forced to leave Russia by the FSB officer Yuri Marklov, who is overseeing the manhunt. 47 contacts his associate, one CIA officer named Carlton Smith, to offer him a deal. 47 will kill Udrey Belikov, Mikhail's brother and a wealthy arms dealer and human trafficker, because, you know, you just got to do both. It's honestly the same kind of business, in exchange for a favor. Smith informs 47 that Udrey had been planning something with a German gunrunner named Price. 47 and Nika travel to Istanbul, where 47 abducts Price, poses as him to meet Udrey at a club, and then kills him, forcing Belikov's double to attend Udrey's public funeral. 47 kidnaps Markov and forces him to order his own agents to disrupt the funeral and create a distraction, while 47, disguised as a soldier, deals with the body double's bodyguards, which is a very fun sentence, and kills him before Whittier arrives with backup from Interpol to take him into custody. Smith delivers on his end of the deal and has his operatives intercept a convoy that is transporting 47 to the airport, allowing the hitman to escape. Back in the present in Whittier's home, 47 suggests Whittier go along with this with his plan, to notify the police that he has killed a fake Agent 47, implying that Whittier will not survive if he refuses, and then proceeds to leave. Nika is seen picking up an envelope containing the deed to a vineyard, a dream of hers to own. Agent 47 is watching her from afar through the scope of a sniper rifle. Looking down at the corpse of another agent lying at his feet, he muses that he had warned him, meaning the organization, not to touch her, and then walks away. It doesn't really specify in this synopsis that there's sort of like a potential love affair thing going on with Nika, but that's kind of a whole thing, and that's why he cared about getting her a vineyard in the end. Now, moving on to Hitman Agent 47, the 2015 film, which has a somehow even more convoluted plot, so bear with me. It is directed by Alexander Bach, screenplay by Skip Woods and Michael Finch, and story also by Skip Woods. It is once again based on the video game series Hitman by IO Interactive. Its cast is made up of Rupert Friend as Agent 47, Hannah Ware as Katya, Zachary Quinto, as John Smith, Ciaran Hines as Pyotr Livenko, however they pronounce it, and Thomas Kretschmann as the clerk. Jesus. Also, I should note it has Diana Burnwood again in this movie, but it's actually credited her properly as Angela Baby, all one word. I don't know who that is, but that's a very fun name. Kicking off with the plot, 47 is a quote-unquote agent, a genetically enhanced super soldier created by one Dr. Peter Livenko, a skilled Ukrainian geneticist. Livenko, unable to bear the guilt of his creation, abandoned the agent project. 47 now works as a hitman for the ICA, the International Contracts Agency, and has spent the last few years tracking down Livenko's daughter, Katya. He gets a lead from mercenaries led by Del Rigo, who have been trying to find Livenko in order to recreate the agent program for their own means. Katya, living in Berlin under the assumed surname Van Dees, has worked tirelessly to find an unknown man and is plagued by overwhelming anxiety and a superhuman awareness of everything around her. Katya is approached at the subway station by a man calling himself John Smith. He tells her that Agent 47 is on his way to kill her, and he offers her protection, while hinting that he has information about the man she's searching for. 47 finds and attacks the pair, who are able to escape, but not before 47 grazes Katya's arm with a sniper bullet. Smith and Katya hide out in a hotel room. He explains that he is an operative for a corporation known as Syndicate International and that the man she's searching for is her father. Katya shows him the clues that she has put together and asks John to tell her everything he knows about her father. Based on the languages he knows, his age, his love of orchids, and his medical condition, that being lung cancer, Katya deduces where her father must be living. Before she can tell Smith, 47 enters, leaving Smith for dead and capturing Katya. Once Katya reawakens, 47 explains to her that she is also an agent, designed by her father to be better than even 47 himself. He goes on to explain that her name, Katya Van Dees, is a homophone of her real name. I am not going to attempt to pronounce the French translation, but it is basically French for the word 90, which is complete bullshit, but I'll get into it. He shows her how to use her heightened senses in combat, and the two fight against the Syndicate's forces. They are once again confronted by Smith, who reveals to have surgically implanted subdermal titanium body armor, making him impervious to gunshots and knives and several other things. Anyway, after fighting off Smith, 47 and Katya manage to escape. Katya makes 47 promise that he won't harm her father and finally reveals Lavenko's location, Singapore. Elsewhere, 47's handler Diana, learning of a situation, contacts another agent with a contract in Singapore. 47 and Katya track down Livenko, who apologizes to Katya for abandoning her, saying that he only wanted to keep her safe and referring to 47 as her brother. Just then, Syndicate soldiers attack the group, and they are forced to flee. During the escape, Livenko is captured by the Syndicate, but not before 47 slips him an inhaler. Smith tortures Livenko under the supervision of Syndicate director Antoine Leclerc, but Livenko refuses to reopen the agent program. 47 hacks into the Syndicate's announcement system, and Katya crashes a stolen helicopter into the building. 47 disguises himself as a firefighter in order to get inside undetected. The two fight their way through the Syndicate's security forces, and 47 is once again confronted by Smith. 47 defeats him by electrocuting him. On the rooftop, 47 and Katya mop up the rest of the Syndicate's troops, but not before Leclerc escapes in a helicopter with Levenko. In midair, Levenko presses his inhaler, which was a bomb apparently, which kills himself and the director. 47 then calls Diana and confirms that his first target, that being Leclerc, has been eliminated. When Diana asks about the second target, implied to be Katya, 47 instead drops his phone off the side of the building. As the two prepare to leave, they are confronted by Agent 48, an exact lookalike of Agent 47, who tells them Diana says hello, before he, Agent 47, and Katya all fire at each other. In the mid-credits scene, Smith is shown to still be alive. Is that all happens? I have so much to say. But I'm going to give it a moment. That's the end of the film. I just to let you know. That's it. That is thankfully it with a bullshit sequel tease. That's never happening. That's so absurd. I don't even have anything else to say. Bring us into the full circle, why don't we?
Okay. We only have a couple to go through here, so I will do it. Unfortunately, these names are going to give me a tough time because I didn't do my due diligence and practice them ahead of time, so let's do it.
Hey, welcome to it.
So, firstly, for Hitman 2007, Atanas Srebrev was the news correspondent, also played Agent Madison in 2019's Hellboy.
Fine.
Robert Nepper was Yuri Markov in Hitman 2007 and was the Colonel in 2008, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yeah. I didn't recognize him without the mustache.
I love that you could just pull that. I have to look it up. Or I'm not going to remember his face.
I don't know why, of all the people, I can remember that character.
The aforementioned Angela Baby was Diana in Hitman Agent 47. I forgot to say we've moved on to Hitman Agent 47. She was also Rain Lau in 2016's Independence Day Resurgence.
Yep, don't even remember.
Aaron Hines was Litvinenko in Hitman Agent 47 and was Furman in 2004's The Phantom of the Opera. You seen this? You heard about this?
What's that?
Jürgen Prochnow was Tobias in the new Hitman, and Judge Griffin in 1995's Judge Dredd, something I actually do remember.
A little bit, yeah.
And finally, Sebastian Holt was Garrett in Hitman Agent 47 and was Hellstrom's driver in 2009's Inglourious Basterds. And that's it for Full Circle.
That is one of the more eclectic full circles we've ever had.
Yeah, not one of our most fun ones. That's not considering the extras that I cut out.
Yeah. And before we get into like our general opinions and everything, I should say I've played a fair bit of the existing Hitman series, like the video games. And I gotta tell you, just right off the bat, they somehow made the lore even more bullshit in the movies. I didn't think it was possible. I'll get into that. I'll be comparing them a lot just because there's a lot of mileage to be found with that. But I needed to say that if you've ever played the Hitman video game series and you know its lore is completely buck wild, these movies somehow do it even worse. It's so funny.
Yeah. So I guess I can get into it and saying that I sort of knew going into this one that you would be the resident Hitman expert, because I know that you're well familiar with the series, especially the new line of, I don't know if you call those remakes, remasters, whatever.
I think they're technically supposed to be like just the latest in the storyline, but the whole storyline's kind of all over the place anyway, so it's kind of up for interpretation.
But yeah, at any rate, I knew that you were the expert because you've brought up playing those games on the show before specifically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And myself, I'm familiar with the games in that I know what they are about, and I have seen clips and some clips of playthroughs of them, but I have never myself played a Hitman game before. So I'm gonna rely on you for a lot of the questions about why this is so convoluted when all the clips I see are just going on assassination missions.
Well, they gotta string them together in as close of a way as they possibly can.
I guess when it comes to these movies, I was expecting there to be more assassinations in these movies or more hit contracts. I mean, people die, but I mean, the first one at least kind of has an assassination. I mean, the second one does too, but they bury it underneath all of this confusing. Oh, yeah, it's... like there's he's not to be trusted. There's multiple main characters, blah, blah, blah. And I will say that just to show my hand up front before I start complaining, I actually overall liked Hitman Agent 47 slightly more than the 2007 Hitman, but it's honestly, it's not saying a lot.
Fair.
But it's just, I'm watching these movies and I'm just like, where are all the like assassination contracts? I was under the impression that this guy was constantly getting contracts because he's a hitman and then he would go out and kill people. You know, whether they're tied together by a narrative or not, these movies don't promise anything by way of that. And in fact, they kind of dilute the character a little bit because even though both of the stories are structured slightly differently in how the characters interact, both of them have this secondary female protagonist tag along that adds an extra layer of complication to things. And again, I don't know if that plays into the game at all, but if it does, I wouldn't think I'd be a fan.
Well, I feel like it bears taking a little bit of time for me to explain at least some of the slight amount of lore of the character of Agent 47 to kind of give you an idea of where the fuck these movies are going. That being, I have no goddamn idea. Well, to answer, like, first of all, the video games, they very much are about going to a bunch of assassination missions. That's the entire point. Like, that's what they do. That if you played those games hoping for that experience, you would have received them. So the fact that I fully agree, the fact that the movies really did not do that, like the first one, the original, the 2007 one, I think in total has like three technical like hit targets. There's the warlord character in the very beginning to kind of establish like, oh, this guy does kills in very creative ways. There's obviously Belikov, and then there's his brother Udre. That's basically it. And the Belikov one sort of becomes a fourth because he has to kill the body double as well. But then, yeah, I don't know. How many were there in the remake? It was really just the maybe in two, the remake, technically.
Technically two, but honestly, I would almost count the one that the entire movie is building up to. But yeah. I guess there were two people specifically involved in that as well. So does that count as double assassination there when only one of them was an intended target? I don't know how that works.
I think it's also the fact of, like, he was meant to kill Katya in the end, but he didn't, and so that's, like, a whole other thing. So it's the fact that one of the hits he was supposed to make, he just didn't do, but that...
I get slightly
ahead of myself. I'll get into his weird motivations in both of these movies, but it just bears saying that the background for the character of 47 in the Hitman series is that he... Both of these movies kind of split it in half, weirdly. He is a genetically engineered person. Like, he was engineered in a lab in somewhere in the, like, I think it may have actually been Ukraine. I think they kept that consistent in 47, Agent 47, I mean. But he eventually at some point escapes and then decides to become an assassin. The fact that he is genetically engineered and that he is a part of an assassination organization, those two things are completely separate. He just, like, happened to be the best designed person for this particular job, and he was just like, well, I don't know what else I'm gonna do with my life. May as well go become an assassin. It's really silly. And there's also a very specific plot point in it that the reason he's so good is because his 47th chromosome was modified in order to basically hold more genetic material. Because apparently the 47th chromosome is what dictates body hair growth. And that's why the character is meant to be completely hairless. It's not any sort of like training thing. It's literally he's genetically incapable of growing hair. And that's also why his name is 47. It wasn't because he was the 47th on the list. It's because he was nicknamed that bad. The scientist who was making him was a nut job. And he was like, I use the 47th chromosome. So I name him 47. Cause I'm pretty sure he meets another character who was from that. And I think his name was just 8. It's like, he's just like, whatever. So that's the kind of lore we're dealing with here. And the fact that in the first movie, it's just, he's basically just Joss Whedon's Black Widow, as established in the Hitman and the Avengers movies. And then in the Agent 47, he's like, the organization basically specifically like paid for the agent program or something. I'm not positive about that, because the Agent 48 shows up at the end. It's the exact clone of him, which is so bullshit wild. Like, when that showed up, I was like, go to hell. Truly go to hell movie. This is so stupid. It just, I don't know. I don't know what the lore on Agent 47 is specifically. Like, the movie Agent 47. God, this is going to be confusing to talk about. The lore on the movie Hitman Agent 47 is so completely out of nowhere that I don't even know how to talk about it. And that is what we're dealing with here, people. And we're comparing the two. And I don't even know where to really begin beyond that, honestly. It's these are two very similar movies, but also so wildly different.
I can start in saying that, obviously, as I've stated, without any Hitman experience and just relying on you for a very rudimentary synopsis of the lore of the games, or at least the character within the games, I kind of get the same...
where all the lore is. Honestly, it's just all on him, and each game tries to like expand it in some way. It basically does what the Saw movies have been doing, where they keep finding more portions of this random of this character's background and life to draw more content from.
John Kramer's been dead for four movies, so let's go back in time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what basically every subsequent Hitman game has always been about. It starts off like, oh, we're doing like assassinations, oh, we're so skilled and everything, but then it turns out, oh, they're all connected and they somehow tie back to Agent 47's background and some other bullshit, and like that's it every single time. It's absurd.
Well, my main takeaway from this is that I kind of get the same feeling as to Metal Gear Solid, in that they've been talking about a movie adaptation being in development hell for so long, and I hope it never happens, because I imagine it'll be just as convoluted as the games are, but it'll be boring, which is what I sort of got from this. It's, you know, they try to make the lore just as convoluted, complicated as it can be in the games, but it's not interesting. And it's also just filled with things that we've seen a million times before in other movies. So, you know, what are you going to do? Why not try to be original and interesting? Because you might potentially, and I understand the pushback from that. You might isolate an audience, but I don't give a shit. Especially with something like Metal Gear, which is one of the highest, you know, best performing video game franchises out there. But I know movies are a different market, so it's this whole bag of snakes that I know we aren't really getting into here. But
right, fair.
To that end, it's funny how complicated that both of these movies make their plots and their lore and their world building from each other, when they're kind of reflections of the two roads diverge sort of tropes that we get, because the first one is Hitman 2007 is basically man goes on a trip, and then Agent 47 is stranger comes to town, at least for the first half. You can't get any more disparate than that, people.
It is strange comparing these movies, because when I watched the first one, I'm like, okay, cool, this is like some like a kind of cheap Equalizer ripoff, whatever. And then the new one, I was like, wow, this somehow is that, but also not. And I don't know how to describe it better than that. It's like if someone saw The Matrix high, and then they also saw the Equalizer even more high, and then also played a Hitman game, and then they tried to make a movie, and we're trying to compare the two. And the fact that, like you said, based on their premises and the way they set up their stories, they are completely diametrically opposed, especially in establishing Agent 47 as a character. But in the end, they still feel so weirdly similar, don't they? Like, in their strange convolutedness.
Like, they do. That's why one of the first things I brought up was like, you have got to explain to me the characters in these games and how they interact, because why is it that both of these movies have a female character that shows up as an important plot device and just hangs around with Agent 47? Is that a feature in the games, or is that just lazy writing?
I think both. Let's be straightforward. It's both. Because also, at least in one of the games, Hitman Absolution, which is widely regarded as being one of the worst ones, that's literally, that is just the plot. He basically goes fully rogue to protect this girl who is meant to have been the continuation of the project that made 47. It basically is just the Hitman, like the Agent 47 movie. That's basically what Hitman Absolution is, but somehow even stupider. Like all the games in the Hitman series have always been at least a little tongue in cheek. They've always been like, yeah, this whole premise is absurd, so we can do all these silly things going on. They don't. The fact that the greatest assassin in the world is perhaps the most recognizable man you will ever meet, a fully hairless man with a straight up barcode on the back of his head. It's like, yeah, this is the greatest assassin on earth. Okay, good to know. Cool. But Hitman Absolution is somehow even stupider and cheesier. Like, they completely drop any ability to take themselves seriously, and it's just stupid all the way through. And one of the core plot points being, it's about him protecting this little girl. It's not like a fully adult person like in these Doom movies, but it's like this little girl that keeps getting. It's basically a MacGuffin. So I don't know if that's come up in other games. That may have come up in like the second or third game briefly, but otherwise it's just about 47 and the like bullshit he has to deal with. Basically, it's just assorted people just going like, hey, here's this guy I can hire to do whatever I want and kill whoever I want. I'm gonna start messing shit up, and then all of a sudden, Agent 47 and his handler are like, wait a minute, this is bad. We should maybe fix this. And that's basically every single game.
I just thought it was so strange that both of these movies fell into that pitfall. So I was like, there's got to be something here, even though the female characters are functionally different. And again, I'll go back to, even though it's even more confusing and messes with lore and whatever, I did enjoy the 2015 one ever so slightly more than the 2007 one, because I guess really just the performances and just how stock and hackney the entire thing felt. Like, there are scenes with Timothy Oliphant and that woman in the car where he's like, I'll pull over the car and shoot you. I'm like, can we just, like, get moving, please, to the rest of the plot? Whereas I at least found part of 2015 interesting. And I will say, a lot of that is with the hindsight of going into it having watched the 2007 version. Because the first half of the 2015 movie, you're not following Agent 47. He's like a man, like a villainous man in the dark that's hunting down the main characters, or the main, you know, the main character, and then the guy that is, you know, pretending to,
Invincible.
Whatever. It's more interesting, I think, in the way it frames itself. And then, you know, it starts to lose me by the second half because once again, it starts falling into all these hackneyed tropes, whatever, that I don't care about.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, I'm kind of on the opposite foot with my opinions on these movies, at least in their performances and everything. I honestly didn't mind the performances with the 2007 one, simply because we've seen a fair few like early 2000s action movies at this point, and this is not the worst, quite frankly. It's at least pretty straightforward. Like the main character is straight up from the get-go established to be basically a charisma-less plank of wood, and that's kind of his entire point. I'm like, all right, fine, we can work with that. And the few occasions where he does have these social interactions with Nika, it very much comes off as, oh, this is a woman who has been beaten and abused for so long that her social graces are kind of all fucked up, and this is a guy who's literally incapable of basic social interaction. It's like, yeah, I get it. This dialogue is kind of stupid because this is the closest either of them have ever come to a positive relationship in their life. And then it thankfully doesn't ever act on anything else. It's basically just 47 is like, all right, she's been through the ringer, and I can at least understand that in some capacity. I'm going to make sure she at least isn't caught in the crossfire of all my bullshit. And that's all it needs. Like, okay, cool. I'm fine with that. It didn't have the whole, like, even when Nika's character tries to come on to him, he fully is like, nope, no, thank you. The moment when that happened, I was like, oh, thank God. We didn't have to see this character try to be like this whole, like, very much the Beauty and the Beast thing of turning, you know, beast into man or that sort of thing. It's like, no, y'all, Agent 47 is the plank of wood that he always will be. Let's not try to change that. So I at least appreciated that as far as the performances went, at least between them. Obviously, the rest of the performances are really nothing really to write home about in 2007. But my God, the dialogue in Agent 47 is so hammy and so stocky, and every word coming out of friggin' Zachary Quinto's mouth, I'm just like, stop talking, man. You have the, like, I know you're not trying to play Spock right now, but you always just sound like Spock because you're so nasally and flat in everything you do. It's like, stop talking. It's so annoying. Like, the moment where he gets stabbed and, like, it doesn't leave a mark or anything, he just goes, pretty crazy, right? It's like, he doesn't, like, he just, if anyone with any amount of charisma or acting ability said that, they might be able to pull it off, but my God, he said it like it's a dude showing off his model train set. I'm like, fucking, this man is so flat.
I didn't care for his performance or his character, which is why I'm kind of glad he fucks off halfway through the movie.
Yeah, he's basically gone for the majority of the film, and really just kind of is just there, which is so weird to have for a character who they establish as having subdermal invincible armor, which, like, I gotta tell you, that's nowhere in the games as far as I know. That's completely, they just decided that's just a thing that exists now, that you can have titanium weave under your skin. It's even by the movie's own logic, that was pure bullshit. Like, there are so many moments in this movie where it seems like it's, I think that's the biggest thing about it as well for me, where the 2007 one is all flashy and like early 2000s, like slow-mo shots, like very, you know, Boondock Saints kind of shit. Of like all these like action sequences and like there's, you know, like sparks and water droplets flying and all these different things. And it's all just meant to be, you know, flash over substance. And again, I can appreciate that for its own thing. It's not really trying to be anything other than kind of hollow and hackney. But it seems like all the action sequences in Agent 47, they were doing deliberately to try and be like, we want people to build, like, remember this and be like, oh, remember that one scene where they were doing all these crazy things, but they just, in most action movies, they will pick one scene to do that with. Like, we brought up, you know, Kingsman earlier. The scene that everyone thinks about from Kingsman is the fight in the church. Like, the fight in the church, the Freebird. Like, that's a badass one-shot style scene. It's not obviously not actually one-shot. It's got just, like, camera tricks. But it's a kick-ass scene, and it's hard to forget. It seems like every single action sequence that Agent 47 was going for, where they were trying to have those moments of like, oh, he's going to be in a car and they're going to stop him with grappling hooks. He's going to fly out of the car and like be doing Matrix moves to shoot everyone, which, by the way, was completely unnecessary. Like, in the Matrix, the whole thing is that he's able to dodge faster than bullets. But meanwhile, Agent 47 is doing like his calisthenics while shooting agents coming at him from all directions. Like, what is happening? And if it's not that scene, it's like the scene in the syndicate building where they're like flying a helicopter through and they're fighting all these agents and everything. Or earlier where they're in like the, where were they exactly? In the factory where they were just jet engines flying around and like giant clamps they could use for like cinematic kills and everything.
Which incidentally, I don't know. If you're asking me about scenery, I have no idea. This movie existed fair. In liminal space for me.
It just kind of kept inventing locations to be. I just don't get it. It was basically, it very much felt like another one of those moments of like, oh, we shot this in Singapore because we got like a kickback from the Singapore like tourism department. Meanwhile, they're driving around a red Audi that gets like completely unscathed and everything. It's like, God, this is obscene. But I don't know. It just felt like every single action sequence they tried to do, they were trying to do their own Hitman or their own, I keep mixing up names now, their own Kingsman church sequence, and it just, none of them even came close. They're just so just deliberately over the top for absolutely no reason. It's like, you gotta earn it, man. Like, and you haven't earned this. Also, again, as you stated before, this doesn't feel like a Hitman. This just feels like a super soldier. This is just a dude doing shit.
Yeah. That being said, though, I don't think any of them reaches the heights of what I would consider a good fight scene necessarily, but I will say that overall, the scene, they achieved what they set out to do, because I remember all of the fight scenes in Agent 47. I barely remember anything about that first Hitman. Like, I have thought multiple times about the subway fight in the 2015 movie, specifically when Zachary Quinto rushes into 47 and they go over the railing and the camera sort of follows them upside down to the subway train. I was like, I think that's a good shot.
That's pretty cool. It's even then, I don't know. It all just felt like such white noise to me at a certain point. Like, it all very much, well, quite honestly, it felt, I'll be straight up here. The Agent 47, it feels the one with its sequences and everything and the style it goes about a lot of it. It's the one that feels the most like how the Hitman games feel. Like the moments where like there's, you know, opportunity kills where they're using like machinery and pieces of like equipment around them and like all these other things going on. That feels the most like kind of the flashiness that the Hitman video game series goes for. So I like it for that, at least. But beyond that, for some reason, it's kind of the opposite scenario for me. So much of it just ends up as white noise to me because none of it's really too notable. Like, there are a few cool shots, obviously, like you mentioned. But it's just, compare that to, you know, the absurd sequence in the 2007 one where he and all the other agents who are all also bald and wearing suits and everything decide to pull out Tonto style knives from their backs because they all apparently just have those and decide to just like start fighting each other dual-handed with samurai swords basically. And it doesn't establish, I brought it up very briefly in the synopsis, it does not establish at a certain point why they're all fighting each other when the other agents are just after Agent 47. They all start aiming at each other, they all start fighting each other, but for some reason, like why do they do that? Like, you guys are on the same side.
I promise you, I watched this movie. I don't fucking remember that at all.
Really?
I don't remember that scene at all.
That was a pretty distinct scene.
You're talking about samurai swords? I was like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, they're not like full samurai. They're not full samurai swords. Like, I think the proper term is like, because there's a katana is like the full sword, and the attanto is like a knife version of a samurai sword, basically. And they all like have two of them stored down their back for some reason. But yeah, like that's a pretty distinct sequence. It lasts a good 5 or 6 minutes. It's yeah.
Talk like, about white moise. I feel like I completely wiped that.
Wow.
For some reason.
I don't know why it like the act. It's got to, man, okay, so now this is what's fascinating for me now. It's not anything about the movies, because both of them are so hackneyed and bullshit. It's kind of hard to talk about them in certain ways. Now I'm wondering why each of us has had such a different reaction to each of the movies. Like,
I don't know why.
You go.
Sort of going off of the biases I was stating, I will say that there is, well, it's weird to say. I was going to say there's familiarity in 2015 that I identified with, but 2007 is familiar in a similar way to every other action movie of that time frame, but the 2015 Agent 47 is just in structure and plotting is interesting to me, and it's kind of like they took Terminator and then Terminator 2 and mashed them together at the halfway point.
That's a pretty good comparison, actually. Yeah, I do like they mixed it up a bit with the plot for Agent 47, simply because, you know what? Yeah, let's do something different with this character. The character Agent 47 is meant to be very menacing, so make him a villain for a bit at least. But I don't know. I think I just appreciate that the original, like the 2007 one, focuses on him as the main character, because yeah, he is the main character of the Hitman series. And true. Trying to make any kind of film not focusing on him is a distinct mistake. It's because it's like, even in the Hitman universe, he is ultimately the most interesting character simply by virtue of he is so unmoving as a character. He is just like this, he's basically a titan of a human in all cases. And it's like, okay, this is hilarious. I love it. Just seeing this man with a very dour expression at all times doing these absurd, crazy kills and everything. And I think I just kind of like Timothy Oliphant's portrayal of him slightly better. Ultimately, neither of these characters act like the Agent 47 in the game. Like, let's just make that upfront. The Agent 47 in the game is about as cold and calculating as it can get. He has like jabs and everything. He has like very, you know, he has very tongue in cheek comments about being an assassin. It's like, excuse me, did you call an exterminator? And then he's trying to talk around the fact that he's about to kill the person he's talking to. Like his alias in all the games, whenever people ask for his name, is Elias Reaper. It's like, all right, he is so just like dour and just. He's not even gallows humor. He's just the gallows. He's basically just the specter of death made manifest. And so neither of these characters are really quite that. I guess Rupert Friend's portrayal comes a bit closer to that. But even then, the amount of emotion he shows on display is just kind of silly. It's, I don't know. He just seems all over the place. And man, he cannot just get his accent straight. He keeps going back and forth between American and English.
That's true. But I will say, to be fair to the 2007 version, because I was making fun of Timothy Oliphant's portrayal earlier, but I can't really say whether it's better or worse than Rupert's in the 2015 version, because we don't spend near as much time with that version of 47, due to the structure of the movie. And even in the second half, when 47 is fully in the movie and along for the ride, he's still not the main protagonist. Whereas that's not the case in the 2007 version. So
it's weird considering the 2015 one is literally named after him.
Yes.
Really? Yeah. I don't know.
Only he's on the poster. We don't have this other woman on the poster. So
true. Yeah, I think that's kind of that might just be my biggest problem with the 2015 one, is that it feels so damn unfocused. I don't know what it was trying to do in the end. Like, if they were wanting to focus on Katya's character, why did they base it in this universe with Agent 47 as the titular character? And if they wanted to just do something in this universe, why bother with all the extra stuff with Katya? It's just, yeah, I don't know. And just like, they're bouncing all over the place and everything, and like the Singapore location, and like all the stuff of like figuring out where her father was, and I don't know, just her whole backstory and connections with Levenko is just kind of just rubs me the wrong way for whatever reason. Meanwhile, in just the 2007 one, is basically like, it's just a hit gone bad. I'm like, all right, fine. That's like, yeah, a job gone bad. That's a very straightforward like film slash story premise. It's basically just The Transporter, but with more murder. And I don't necessarily mind that as much. It doesn't feel like the 2007 one doesn't feel like it's trying to do anything too particularly well. It really just said like, hey, we have the rights to make a movie from this IP. Let's just do something pretty straightforward with it. Have some fun and then leave. It feels like the Agent 47 one is trying to do the Marvel thing of like setting up this wider universe a little bit where like, you know, we have characters with subdermal armor and there's this clone of 47 and there's a whole thing where this girl is actually like the better version of 47. It's just like, what are we doing here, y'all? This is meant to just be like a dude who takes out contracts. Like,
well, now I'm about to reverse all my decisions because you brought up Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. you can see it, can't you? You can see it. This wasn't quite at the height of Marvel's, you know, widespread Marvelization, but damn, did they not try to capitalize on it.
No, I can definitely see. I can definitely see where you're coming from. Certainly, I just think I'm still so blinded to it. And I mean, like you were saying, I don't want to completely write it off because, like you were saying, with the focus and the actual character portrayals, I think there is real, you know, something really to go off of there. But I wonder if my unfamiliarity with the franchise has led me astray at all.
Definitely. I will say it almost certainly, these movies are really better appreciated if you've actually played the games because yeah, it gives at least some context and you can actually kind of see like either small references or nods that kind of call back to kind of at least themes or styles that the games can kind of do. Like the kind of the fact that the 2007 one is still over the top. It's like, yeah, that's just what Hitman is like. And the fact that Agent 47 has a lot of these very particular set piece moments is a lot what is very much like a lot what the more modern games have done, where like, you know, you basically just set people up and then you just watch them get killed in absurd situations. And so you're able to kind of take a step back from what they're trying to do and take them for a bit more of the silliness that they have on display. But on their own, yeah, I can see where these would just kind of come off as dumb in either case. That's kind of the sad fact of it.
Well, I mean, that's certainly good to know. I think I still stand by my opinion that I had going into this, but I certainly have a much better outlook on the specifics of the two and how they correlate to the franchise that they're based on.
Yeah. I'm still just trying to like kind of parse through why we have such different takes, like not even takes, just like reactions to each of these films, because it's very fun to me. I think at the end of the day,
it's not often.
I think I have just kind of a strange soft spot for these early 2000s action movies. I think they're just so like trying to take themselves so seriously and they're just doing all these things, all these like at least practical effects and everything, that I can actually have a pretty decent level of appreciation for them. You know, like it's stuff like this, like I mentioned Transporter, like with, you know, what's his name? The English guy who's in a bunch of the Fast and Furious movies now. I don't know.
I haven't seen any of those. Can't help you.
No, fair. Well, whatever his name is, like, you know, it's just him being it's basically the movie Drive, but before Drive and also way more absurd. And it's just, you know, it's the people doing like cool stuff and like driving cars around and having this, you know, kind of a fun time. And like, it was from a period of time where Marvel hadn't quite taken the world by storm and we could just kind of appreciate action movies as self-contained little romps. Like there's no sequel tease. There's no attempts to create a wider universe other than what you just need to see to understand the premise. And it just kind of doesn't try to outstay its welcome. I mean, it's a 90-minute film. It doesn't really do anything absurd. It's like, oh, the president of Russia has been replaced by his own body double. It's like, wow, that's silly and absurd. And also somehow manages to avoid most political, you know, baggage that you could have with that situation, especially just Russia being Russia. It's like, all right, fine, whatever. And then just comparing that to the new one where it just feels like everything just has to be so, like, just so cleanly over the top, like how clean, like how much CG there is. And, you know, like I said, it very much feels like there's multiple occasions where like they're driving around in Singapore where they're just using establishing shots that I swear you could just stamp on, visit the city of Singapore up in the top left. It just all feels very hack, like very, you know, corporate level hack, and it's just hard for me to really stomach it at a certain point. So I don't know, I think just I miss the times in which we were not so overruled by the feeling of sequelization that is the Marvel plague ultimately.
Too true.
Which is wild to think about, because like I think Iron Man came out in like 2008. Which I guess they hadn't really gotten into the weeds of that stuff at that point yet, but still.
They hadn't, but they were still planning on it because of all the Sam Jackson stuff.
Yeah, so exactly.
They knew where they were going. They didn't know to what level, I'm sure, but they knew.
Yeah.
Blame them. It's actually funny because you reminded me of something else when you were talking about the president in the first one, but a lot of the scenes that I do recall from the 2007 Hitman are specifically the sniper related scenes and the setting up of the gun and the destroying of the evidence and all that. And it's just, I remember watching it because I think I zoned out because I started thinking about Day of the Jackal and then that's all thinking about instead. So,
oh my God.
There you go. So I love that movie.
We've watched a surprising number of movies that have a lot of focus on snipers, ironically. Which I think, I'm thinking about that more and more. Man, there's a lot of early 2000s movies that had a lot of scenes and sequences specifically relating to snipers. That was a very big thing for a while. There was entire movies about it.
Hollywood's in its sniper era.
Yeah. Which, like, I guess that you still got a few of them for a while. Like, the end of that trope was basically American Sniper, because it just brought it into kind of postmodernism at that point.
All right, we're talking about it. We're done. Pack it up.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we're talking about the emotional impact of this shit now. Okay, we're good. Let's move on.
I'm good. I'm done.
So yeah, it's funny to think about that, because, like, yeah, there's a lot of sequences with snipers in 2007. And also then, I brought up Saw earlier. I just, this feels necessary to bring up just because, like, I kept thinking about it when I saw it. There's also a very brief moment where the movie sort of turns into a Saw movie, where one character...
Oh, yeah, with the KGB... Oh, my God.
Well, not even that. Like, oh, my God, there's two scenes then. Okay, like, in the first week, yeah, the one guy is forced to swallow a C4 bomb in order to, like, you know, be used against another target. But then later, when 47 captures that one FSB agent and, like, chains him up in a bathtub with barbed wire, tapes this, like the whole thing, he glazes over it in the synopsis, but the sequence where he's like, oh, he gets the one Markov character to, you know, cause a distraction, what that entails is captures him, chains him up in a filled bathtub, like filled like metal bathtub, he's chained it up in there with barbed wire, let me make that clear, and one of his hands has a radio tape to it that is meant to contact one of the bodyguards of the president, and in order to stop himself from being electrocuted to death, he has to call his guards and tell them to shoot at this president character. It's like, where the hell did this come from? And the fact that it doesn't even amount to really all that much. Like, it's just so that Agent 47 can have an opportunity to cause a distraction, and I don't even know if we ever see him again. Like, I don't think I truly can't remember now if he's ever, this character in the bathtub is ever seen again after this whole situation. It's just, it comes in there out of nowhere and then it's just gone. And like, he even has a lot of similar shots from Saw where it shows him like trying to move, but he's like screams in agony. There's like really quick camera shots. It's like very stressful, like with a timer coming down to him being electrocuted. It's like, this is just Saw. Why are we doing this? This is out of nowhere.
Saw fever, baby. You see, I remember that scene very well.
Yeah. That was a very distinct scene, simply because it was from another movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. There were a lot of moments like that in the 2007 one where I was like, what the fuck? They were at least kind of like fun and distinctive, though, in their own way of like, all right, I guess we're doing this now. That's like the thing, like I said, the knife fight that they had going on and this whole situation, the fact that there's basically a full segue in order for him to go kill this brother character to set up a thing for later. It's like, all right, we're just doing sequence, like random sequences now. Let's just go for it. So I don't know. Again, it just kind of falls back in that moment of like, you know what? It's all just doing random shit and it's not trying to do more than that. Let's just call it a day and be done. So, yeah.
I mean, it is pretty interesting. Just we don't disagree very often.
Yeah. It's wild seeing because we're not like foaming at the mouth disagreeing with each other. We both just had such different experiences with each of these movies. It's very fascinating to me. It's not even like a philosophical thing. It's just the fact of we basically each had completely opposite reactions of one movie was pretty distinct and a lot of memorable parts to it. The other one I barely remember at all. And it's
well,
the fact that it's either one for us.
Yeah, it's like I feel the exact other way. It is quite interesting.
It's ultimately, it feels like we have the exact same opinion. We're just doing it in different directions. It's like,
so
it's like,
that means this one of us has to be wrong.
Yeah, and one of us somehow we are both wrong and both right. It's like, I don't even know what this is.
Well, you decide.
It's like, if I feel like Schrodinger's Hitman.
Let us know in the comments below and we won't read it.
Yeah. You shoot us an email and we'll be like, what?
I forgot all about it.
It's like, I've fully forgotten both of these movies now. This will leave my mind the moment I leave this friggin' recording situation I have going on.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee I'm not watching either of these ever again, so.
Oh yeah, no, not even a little. Like, it truly depends on whose opinion you personally value more of which one of these movies you think is the better film. And honestly, I wouldn't be broken up either way. Like, it's like, whatever. It's these movies are, let's make it clear. I think at the end of the day, both of these movies are stupid as hell. It's just, they're stupid in different ways, but also the same way.
And can you ask for anything more?
I mean, I could ask for a nice movie.
Well, true. Yes. Maybe we'll talk good movies next time.
Oh, sweet God. Suck how often we just have movies on here that are just like, just truly not worth the time. It's just like, yeah. The amount of time we spend on movies are just like, man, could have done anything else. It sucks when both movies are like that.
True. Yeah. I mean, I definitely watch worse in my free time, but I think, yeah. I think it's the fact that we watch these and then we devote like 2 hours to talking about them.
Yeah. Like, at least even with Secret of Nim, we at least had one of them. Like, one of them was, you know, a Don Bluth masterpiece. We had something to work with here.
Yeah, we usually have something.
Oh, God. Yeah. Have we buried the lead of our opinions well enough by now?
I think so. No one has any idea.
Yeah. Honestly, if you just go play the Hitman games, folks. Like, friggin' the newer ones are basically all you need to play. If you really have to play one, play Blood Money. That's the older one that everyone really seems to like. I thought it was kind of but that's just my opinion.
Yikes. Well, do you have any questions to pose?
Oh, man, I don't. It's definitely one of those things of, if I wanted there to be, you know, a premise of this centered on, like, another, you know, I'd like to, like, I'm trying to, okay, I've just come up with this one. In the sense of, you know, either the video game series or these movies, where would you, in what fictional universe would you like to see Hitman 47 make his next appearance? Like, he got a contract for something in, like, Star Wars, like, something like that. Where would you like to see him show up?
So he shows that we get an entire Hitman movie, but it's in that universe, you mean?
Yes, basically. He gets isekai'd. He gets isekai'd to another world.
He gets hit by a truck and, okay. Yes. I think Trolls. DreamWorks Trolls.
Oh my God, DreamWorks Trolls. Okay, wait.
Blasting people.
Hold up. Is he a troll or is he completely the same? Like a normal looking human. Okay, normal, quote unquote.
I think it'd be funnier if he was normal looking human, but maybe he would be reduced in size. Because then at least it'd be fair. It wouldn't be like a Gargamel running around torturing Smurfs.
Right. Okay, cool. That's hilarious. That is infinitely better than anything I could have picked, and I feel embarrassed now. Okay, no, if you have a question, I will think of my answer to this question while you ask another one. But if you don't have one, then I'll just pick something at random.
I honestly don't have anything.
Okay, then going with what I talked about earlier, one of the Ace Combat series, he's just in a plane.
He's in a plane gunning people down?
It's just in a plane doing the same level of, like, ridiculous assassination things just somehow from a plane. He, like, sets up a Rube Goldberg situation from, you know, the high, like, low Earth orbit.
But he's also doing, like, cool combat maneuvers like he's in Top Gun.
Exactly, yeah. Like Danger Zone is still playing, but he's making absolutely no facial reactions. He's sniping people. He is sniping people with the machine gun of a plane. Of a fighter jet.
Who do you think would be the best Agent 47 for this?
Oh, to play Agent 47?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's an excellent question. I am not sure. Okay, there's this one actor. I need to look up his name. He was in the Gotham TV series and also the series Barry. Hang on. Barry cast. Anthony Carrigan or Carrigan. He tends to play more kind of silly characters, and he's a pretty chill looking guy. But look him up. He is a dead ringer for what Agent 47 would need to look like. He literally, I think he specifically, he has a like genetic condition where he used to have hair in his younger life, but he eventually fully went like full bald all over his body.
I see.
And so he is a dead ringer, at least visually, to play the character. And I think if he kind of went for the more like, you know, cold calculating style, I think he could do it pretty damn well. And if you've ever seen, you know, if anyone out there, if you've ever seen Barry, and he plays NoHo Hank in Barry, who's this, I don't know where, he's like some vaguely Eastern European like gangster type, but he's just like really silly and kind of like oddly kind of like optimistic of a character. It's just he ends up being a very tragic character as well. Barry as a show is fucking like riveting and devastating and absurd, and he plays an incredible character in it. So I think he would actually do really well for that. That's all I have to say about that. That's just a very serious answer. I wanted to think of a funny one, but I think he'd be a genuinely good person to have play that character.
Nice. It looks like he's slated to be in the upcoming Superman Legacy film directed by James Gunn, so look for that.
Fun. I have no idea who he could be playing.
Metamorpho? Yeah.
You know, it's moments like this that I really gotta, like, remember with all the talk that we've done about superheroes and comics and characters and everything for the last many years, that I'm reminded, hey, these were, like, colored illustrations for kids. And this is a billion-dollar industry now, and it's got, like, all this, like Zack Snyder had a whole thing with his deal, and it's got characters unironically called Metamorpho in it.
I'm sure that won't be a Sandman-level disaster at all.
No, not at all.
I don't even know how they're going to go about doing that. Isn't his gimmick that his body is constantly shifting between random elements?
I mean, I don't, how the fuck, I don't fuck, I can only assume by the name.
Like, he was in, I don't know, Justice League, the cartoon, or maybe Justice League Unlimited, I can't remember.
There's a lot of those episodes, man. I haven't seen them all.
Oh, okay.
I just cared about the ones with the question.
Yes, you watched like 3 episodes of both shows combined.
He's like my favorite C-lister.
It's sad how
much that isn't a joke. Of all the characters, I get it. He's basically just Batman but unhinged. He's not Batman. He's Batman if he weren't that fit and were just into conspiracies.
I prefer Detective Chimp.
Honestly, respectable.
All right, are we ready for socials?
Sure, unless you had an actor you'd want to play 47.
Oh, fuck, I don't know. I'd cast Brian Posehn as the voice of 47 in the Hitman cartoon. Let's go with that.
Damn, you picked the smartest option.
Because I didn't think about that at all.
Fair, fair.
All right, so go ahead and subscribe and follow us on any of your favorite podcasting platforms. We're on things like Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podbay, Podomatic, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, YouTube. But we're hosted on Spotify for Podcasts, or Spotify for Podcasters. Fuck, I don't remember. Send us an email. TheyRemadeIt@gmail.com with suggestions for future episodes. If you have any thoughts on the podcast, what we could be doing better, what we're doing great, or if you just want to say hi, that's perfectly fine.
We always love a good hi.
Yeah, I'll say hi back. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm busy.
We'll be hi together. Wait.
Redact. Nancy Reagan's <Don't>. Listening.
that bitch.
Go ahead and follow us at It Remade on Twitter and theyremade.social.bluesky or .bluesky.social, I should say, because we are on both of those platforms.
Yeah, and don't need an invitation no more.
No, which is funny because I put us on the queue to get on Blue Sky like 3 months ago, and then just the other week, it's like they took it down. They took down the queue because they didn't need it anymore. So I was like, okay, I guess we're in.
Winning by default. I love it.
So yes, we are on Twitter or X, and we are on Blue Sky as well. And follow us on both of those places. for updates on when new episodes are going live, potential future episodes that we might cover someday, posters and things for movies, games, TV shows, etc. that we've been talking about on the podcast and the little intros that we do at the beginning, as well as full circle diagrams I've been putting together for folks that we've talked about more than once on the show. And that is it for socials.
Well, fantastic. I now need to, one, play, having talked about all of them, I need to, one, play some of the Hitman games again. I need to, two, go watch Barry again, because I really love that show. And three, find the episodes of Metamorpho on Justice League, possibly Justice League Unlimited. So yes. Because, you know what, I should, I may as well see what the highest quality of this character is, because God knows the new movie is not going to do shit.
Even with your boy Anthony Carrigan in the role, they won't be able to live up to it.
I will Google his scenes later.
I will not be going to the theater in fucking 2025 to watch James Gunn's next superhero movie.
Oh, God. How many has he had now?
Like
five? Too many. Too many. That's how many.
Okay. Good answer.
There are too many superhero movies. I've said it once. I'll say it 1,000 times.
You know what we could use is a gritty deconstruction of the superhero genre. I'd like to see something like that.
Cue the Imagine Dragons song. you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Well, mainly because that's the only Imagine Dragons song I know. So,
well, I can't think of a better way to leave it. As always, I am your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
Have a good night, everybody. When until the reaper takes my life, never gonna get me out of life. I will live 1,000,000,000 lives. My patience is waning. Is this entertaining? My patience is waning. Is this entertaining?
Rumor has it that he works for a group known only as the Organization. So secret, no one knows it exists. It takes no sides, yet it has ties to every government. Its sole purpose is the training and conditioning of professional killers. These men are selected at birth. Rejects, orphans, all of them unwanted and disposable. They are made experts in every aspect of combat and programmed for one purpose, to kill. The man you have been chasing for the last 3 years, Inspector, is the very best of them.